In the shadowy world of psychological thrillers, few novels have captured the essence of betrayal and survival quite like The Drowning Woman. This masterpiece by Robin Harding has been described as pulse-pounding by best-selling author Laurie Elizabeth Flynn, with others praising its unpredictable twists and dark exploration of redemption. The book has developed a cult following among thriller enthusiasts and celebrities alike, with Reese Witherspoon reportedly considering it for her book club before its official release. What makes this novel particularly compelling is how it examines the thin line between victim and perpetrator, forcing readers to question their assumptions about homelessness, abuse, and the lengths people will go to escape their circumstances. In a literary landscape saturated with domestic thrillers, Harding's work stands apart through its nuanced character development and moral complexity that leaves readers questioning their own capacity for deception. Lee sleeps in her car beneath an underpass, a stark contrast to her former life as a successful restaurant owner. She reflects on the fundamental attribution error, how people assume the homeless brought their situation upon themselves, a belief she herself once held before her downfall. Now she understands the brutal reality of living without shelter, sleeping with doors locked and keys ready, keeping a knife for protection and whiskey for warmth. Her journey to homelessness began with a dream. She owned The Aviary, a restaurant in New York's East Village, partially funded by Damon, a dangerous-seeming regular customer from her previous workplace. Despite knowing his money was shady, she accepted his investment to fulfill her ambition. Then came the pandemic, first forcing closure, then creating staffing issues during the Omicron wave, ultimately destroying her business. When she couldn't repay Damon, he crushed her finger with a meat mallet and threatened worse, forcing her to flee across the country to Seattle. Now Lee works at Uncle Jack's, a rundown diner that employs people without documentation or references. Her boss Randy pays her under the table, barely enough to survive. The vulnerability of her situation becomes painfully clear when, after her car window is smashed and her belongings stolen, Vincent's friend propositions her for sex work. Though she refuses, she recognizes how easily people can be pushed into selling themselves when they have nothing left. The precariousness of homelessness follows Lee everywhere. She must carefully choose where to sleep, hiding her cash in different locations to prevent theft. She avoids contacting her estranged sister, Teresa, knowing her apology would never be accepted for the cruel, self-serving thing she did. Each night brings new dangers, until one dawn when she hears a woman crying, followed by a splash. In the frigid waters of the Pacific, Lee rescues a suicidal woman who fights against being saved. After dragging her to shore, they share whiskey and Lee's sleeping bag to combat hypothermia. The woman reveals she was trying to kill herself because her husband, a rich, powerful criminal defense lawyer, is abusive and sadistic. Despite living in an 8,000-square-foot waterfront home nearby, she describes it as a prison worse than Lee's car-dwelling situation. The next morning, the woman returns, looking softer and smiling. She introduces herself as Hazel and thanks Lee for saving her life, admitting she's grateful to be alive. As a token of appreciation, she gives Lee a netsuke, a traditional Japanese toggle carved from bone in the shape of a coiled snake, explaining it's from her husband's collection and dates to the early 19th century. When Lee asks about her life, Hazel reveals her controlling relationship with Benjamin, saying, "I do what I'm told," and admitting she'll be punished if not home by 6:30. Their connection deepens when Hazel finds Lee sleeping feverishly in her car and brings her breakfast, promising to return with medicine and supplies. Lee wishes Hazel would invite her into her home, but understands why she doesn't. Despite their different circumstances, they form a bond based on mutual vulnerability and need. This unexpected friendship offers Lee a glimmer of hope. When Hazel sells some of her husband's makeup gifts, jewelry given after he hurt her, to fund new identities for their escape, Lee begins to imagine a different future. Hazel plans to flee to Panama, where she can build a new life with cash, no questions asked. Though Lee is skeptical, the possibility of escape is intoxicating. but relationships formed in desperation are rarely what they seem. When Lee unexpectedly encounters Hazel with two wealthy female friends, Hazel pretends not to know her well, treating her like a homeless stranger and offering her $50 for lunch. Lee takes the money, but leaves humiliated and angry at being treated with such condescension. While working at the diner, Lee meets Jesse, a customer who had previously offered her an orange at an auto shop, a small kindness that had moved her deeply. Despite her circumstances, she feels drawn to him, enjoying feeling attractive again. After her shift, they go for a drink, and when the whiskey combined with her cold medicine nearly puts her to sleep, Jesse kindly brings her to his apartment, helps her undress, and sleeps on the couch. Jesse presents himself as a personal trainer who aspires to write music. He seems genuinely interested in Lee's past as a restaurant owner and encourages her dreams. Their relationship quickly becomes physical, awakening long-dormant desire in Lee. But the contrast between her pretend life with Jesse and her reality of sleeping in her car with whiskey and a knife for comfort is painful. As their relationship develops, Jesse appears supportive of Lee's plan to help Hazel escape her abusive husband. He shares that his mother suffered abuse, creating another point of connection between them. But there's something not quite right about Jesse. His apartment is sparse, almost temporary, and he's vague about his past. When Lee loses her car keys and Jesse finds them, she panics when he asks about her apartment keys, caught in her lie about where she lives. The chemistry between them is undeniable, but their encounters sometimes leave Lee feeling strangely empty. After one particularly frenzied encounter against her car, she misses the tenderness of their previous intimacy. Vincent from the kitchen catches her afterward, possibly having witnessed everything, adding to her humiliation. Jesse drives away before she can get his number. Despite these warning signs, Lee continues to see Jesse, even cooking coq au vin at his apartment one evening. When she confesses her plan to help Hazel escape by impersonating her, Jesse expresses concern but ultimately supports her decision. What Lee doesn't realize is that Jesse is harboring secrets far darker than her own. At Hazel's suggestion, Lee visits a Scandinavian-style spa where her hair is transformed with a cut and highlights that resemble Hazel's. When she discovers the treatments weren't prepaid as promised, Hazel arrives to settle the bill. Outside, she removes her sunglasses, revealing a dark purple bruise under her eye, and tells Lee, "I have to leave before he kills me." Hazel proposes a desperate plan. Lee will impersonate her for a few hours to give Hazel time to escape to the airport. They'll exchange clothes at the gym, and Lee will drive Hazel's Mercedes home to fool Benjamin and his security team. In exchange, Hazel will leave Lee $50,000 and a new ID, enough to start over. Despite her anxiety, seeing Hazel's bruised face and desperation, Lee agrees to help. The next morning, they execute the plan. Inside the change room at Hazel's gym, they exchange clothes. Lee puts on Hazel's workout clothes, while Hazel dons Lee's casual attire. The resemblance between them is striking. Hazel thanks Lee emotionally, reminding her the envelope with money and new ID is in her kitchen drawer. They review the plan. Lee will enter Hazel's house, retrieve the envelope, make a salad, then drive Hazel's Mercedes to Trader Joe's, where she'll change appearance and escape in her car while Hazel flies to Panama. Driving Hazel's Mercedes to her waterfront home, Lee is struck by the magnitude of what she's doing. Inside the stunning glass and steel mansion, she retrieves the thick envelope from the drawer and places it in Hazel's purse, then prepares a salad while waiting for the right time to leave. Curiosity leads her to peek into Benjamin's study, where she makes a horrifying discovery: a dead body slumped in a chair, stabbed multiple times. When she turns the chair to see the face, she screams in terror. It's not Benjamin, it's Jesse. What Lee couldn't know was Hazel's true story. Hazel had been warned about Benjamin Laval before they even met. Despite cautions from her friend Marielle that he was a total freak in the bedroom, Hazel was intrigued by this distinguished man with a kinky side. After their first encounter proved exciting but manageable, Benjamin pursued her with dinners and luxury experiences. Coming from financial struggle and caring for her mother with early-onset Alzheimer's, Hazel was drawn to his wealth and generosity. He relocated her mother to an expensive private care facility, which sealed her commitment to him. Just before their wedding, Benjamin presented a contract upgrading their dominant-slash-submissive relationship to master-slave, threatening to cancel their wedding if she refused. Trapped by circumstances and concerned for her mother's care, she signed both this and a prenup stipulating he would care for her mother only as long as we're married. What began as consensual role play gradually evolved into genuine abuse. Benjamin's need for control escalated from bedroom games to constant mental and emotional torture. Hazel was relegated to a 1950s housewife role, cooking, cleaning, and dressing as he dictated. In public, she followed strict protocols, walking slightly ahead to his right, asking permission to use restrooms, addressing him as chief while he called her Missy, short for submissive. During the pandemic lockdown, his violence intensified with no witnesses to see her bruises. He installed security guards, ostensibly for protection, but actually to monitor her. Her only freedom came from running in the nearby state park. When depression overtook her, Benjamin sent her to his psychiatrist friend, who prescribed medication without knowing the truth. When Jesse touched her gently at the gym, saying he didn't want her to get hurt, Hazel was instantly receptive. Though she initially rejected his coffee invitation because of her marriage, the chemistry between them was impossible to ignore. They began meeting secretly at his apartment for passionate encounters that felt pure and beautiful to her. When she lamented that she couldn't leave Benjamin because he'd kill them both and throw her mother out, Jesse suggested a radical solution. She could disappear by faking her death in an accidental drowning, allowing them to escape while ensuring Benjamin would still care for her mother per their marriage agreement. What neither woman knew was that Jesse Thomas was actually Carter Sumner, a violent criminal with a prison record. Carter and his brother Sean had been arrested for a brutal home invasion where they beat a homeowner named Donald Fryer. Benjamin Laval had been Carter's lawyer, convincing him to testify against his brother in exchange for a lighter sentence. After his release, Carter began an affair with Hazel, Benjamin's wife. His relationship with Lee was part of an elaborate scheme. Carter and Hazel were plotting to murder Benjamin and frame Lee for the crime. The plan was for Lee to discover Benjamin's body, not Jesse's. When Benjamin discovered their plot, his security team killed Carter. The body Lee found in Benjamin's study was meant to be Benjamin's, not Jesse's. The entire scheme, from Lee's rescue of Hazel to Jesse seeking her out at the diner, had been carefully orchestrated to set Lee up as the perfect fall person. In a cruel twist, Lee discovers a USB drive hidden in Jesse's pen containing audio recordings that reveal not just Carter's sociopathic nature, but also implicate someone else whose voice she recognizes, another murderer who would kill her if they knew she'd heard these files. Meanwhile, Hazel returns home to find Benjamin alive, relieved her plan to thwart Jesse's murder attempt worked. But Benjamin knows everything about Carter targeting her as part of his scheme. Benjamin sends Hazel to the room, his basement prison, while he decides what to do with her. With her entire understanding shattered and realizing she can trust no one, Lee flees with the dangerous evidence. She has $75,000 between Hazel and Benjamin's payments and two possible escape routes. Austin would let her rebuild her life as Lee, while Panama offers true escape as Kelly Wilcox. Meanwhile, Hazel prepares for suicide, recording a video detailing how Benjamin has abused her through a total power exchange contract, mental torture, and complete control over her life. She schedules the video to post to all her social media in 1 week, hoping to destroy her husband's reputation after her death. Just as she's about to take the pills, police officers arrive to arrest Benjamin for conspiracy to commit murder, hers. The recordings Carter made as insurance have been submitted anonymously to the police. However, without Carter to authenticate them, the judge rules the recordings hearsay, and Benjamin's lawyers suggest they could have been faked by someone with a grudge. With Benjamin's release imminent, Hazel transforms herself with a short blonde haircut and buys a nondescript car with cash. She hides in cheap motels, constantly moving to avoid detection. Then she receives devastating news. Her mother has been found dead in Bedford Park, a place where they once shared picnics. Benjamin eventually tracks Hazel down through her new phone number that she'd given to the nursing home he pays for. He reveals his plan to have her committed to psychiatric care through his friend Dr. Vaillard. When a brave motel worker interrupts their confrontation, Hazel escapes, slashing Benjamin's cheek before fleeing in her car. Later, Detective French calls to inform Hazel that Carter's jawbone has washed ashore and Nate Matthias, Benjamin's security guard, has been arrested for his murder. Nate has implicated Benjamin, claiming he ordered Carter's killing after discovering their affair. Instead of helping build the case against Benjamin, Hazel retrieves a hidden passport she had secretly obtained through the dark web and disappears for good. 3 months after her daring escape, Lee has carved out a new life as Kelly Wilcox on Panama's Isla Carinero, a tiny Caribbean island where turquoise waters meet white sand beaches. She runs The Nest, a charming beachside restaurant that serves fresh seafood and tropical cocktails to tourists and locals alike. The simple life she's built feels worlds away from the darkness she left behind in Seattle, until one humid afternoon when a familiar blonde woman walks through her door. The sight of Hazel, now going by Nora Harmsworth, sends a jolt through Lee's carefully constructed piece. Her former friend looks different, sun-kissed skin, casual linen clothes, and a certain weightlessness that wasn't there before. They find themselves on the beach at sunset, bottles of local beer growing warm in the sand as years of secrets finally surface. Lee reveals the haunting details of that night in Benjamin's study, finding Carter's body, the metallic smell of blood, the paralyzing fear that followed. Hazel, in turn, shares the gruesome truth. Benjamin's ruthless security guard had murdered Jesse/Carter, methodically dismembering the body in an attempt to make him disappear forever. But the ocean had other plans, washing up Carter's jawbone and leading authorities straight to Benjamin, who now sits in a Seattle jail cell awaiting trial for murder. Their conversation stretches into the night, raw and honest. Hazel's eyes fill with tears as she apologizes for the web of manipulation she'd woven, insisting that beneath the lies, their friendship had grown into something genuine and valuable. The confession hangs in the salt air between them, heavy with possibility. When Hazel mentions plans to leave the next day, Lee surprises herself by offering her a position at The Nest. It's an olive branch extended with trembling fingers, trust damaged but not destroyed. Both women have emerged from their ordeal transformed. Lee is no longer the naive newcomer to Seattle's elite circles, and Hazel has shed her role as Benjamin's carefully controlled puppet. They've both proven themselves capable of not just surviving, but outsmarting the men who sought to control and destroy them. Walking back toward the warmly lit restaurant, their bare feet leaving parallel tracks in the cooling sand, Lee contemplates the strange symmetry of their situation. Here in this tropical paradise, thousands of miles from the cold, dark waters where their stories first intertwined, they found their way back to each other. Though scars remain, there's something powerful in their shared experience of breaking free, of refusing to be victims. As the Caribbean breeze carries the sound of distant music from the beach bars, Lee realizes that sometimes the deepest friendships are forged in fire, and that redemption, like the sunset painting the sky above them, can be both beautiful and unexpected. Throughout The Drowning Woman, characters constantly reinvent themselves, shedding identities like snakeskin. Lee becomes homeless after fleeing her restaurant and Damon's threats, then impersonates Hazel, and finally reinvents herself as Kelly Wilcox in Panama. Hazel plays the perfect submissive wife to Benjamin while secretly planning her escape, then becomes Nora Harmsworth. Jesse Thomas is actually Carter Sumner, a violent criminal playing both women for his own game. These transformations raise profound questions about identity. Who are we when everything is stripped away? When Lee loses her restaurant, her home, and her sense of self, she discovers a resilience she never knew she possessed. When Hazel is trapped in an abusive marriage, she finds strength in deception and manipulation. Even Benjamin Laval maintains a respectable public face while privately torturing his wife. The Netsuke snack figurine that Hazel gives Lee becomes a powerful symbol of this theme. Like a snake shedding its skin, the characters must discard their old selves to survive. But unlike a snake's natural process, these transformations come at a terrible cost: betrayal, violence, and moral compromise. Perhaps most disturbing is how easily we can be fooled by appearances. Lee believes Jesse as a kind, supportive partner when he's actually a violent criminal setting her up. Hazel presents herself as a victim needing rescue when she's plotting murder. Benjamin appears to be a respected lawyer while secretly abusing his wife. Even the homeless are not who they seem. Lee was once successful, demonstrating how quickly circumstances can change. In the end, both women escape to Panama, reinventing themselves yet again. Their final meeting suggests that perhaps, after shedding so many false identities, they might finally be able to forge authentic connections based on their shared experiences of survival and transformation. As they walk back toward Lee's restaurant, The Nest, there's a sense that they might finally have found a place where they can be their true selves, whoever that might be. At its core, The Drowning Woman explores the terrible bargains we make for freedom. Each character makes sacrifices that challenge their moral compass and reveal the lengths to which people will go to escape intolerable situations. Lee abandons her restaurant and staff to flee Damon's threats, then agrees to impersonate Hazel despite the legal risks. Hazel endures Benjamin's abuse to ensure her mother receives proper care, then plots his murder to escape. Even Jesse/Carter makes his own devil's bargain, testifying against his brother for a lighter sentence and later planning to murder Benjamin for money. These compromises raise uncomfortable questions. What would you do if you were homeless and desperate? How far would you go to escape an abusive relationship? At what point do survival tactics become morally indefensible? The novel refuses to provide easy answers. Lee's homelessness humanizes her, making her sympathetic despite her willingness to participate in Hazel's deception. Hazel's abuse generates compassion even as we discover her murderous intentions. Even Benjamin, the novel's primary villain, has moments that hint at complex motivations beyond simple sadism. Perhaps most poignantly, the novel shows how women in particular must navigate systems designed to trap them. Benjamin uses his wealth and legal knowledge to control Hazel through contracts and prenuptial agreements. Lee finds herself vulnerable to sexual exploitation when homeless. Both women discover that the legal system offers little protection against powerful men. In the end, their escape to Panama represents not just physical freedom, but liberation from societal structures that fail to protect them. Their beachside existence, while precarious, allows them to define themselves on their own terms rather than through relationships with men or material possessions. The price they paid was enormous, involving deception, complicity in violence, and abandonment of their former lives. But the alternative was continued subjugation or death. As we leave them contemplating a renewed friendship, we're left wondering, was it worth it? And what would we have done in their place?